Matthew chapter 26, verse 14. Bible says, "Then one of the 12, called Judas Iscariot, went unto the chief priests and said unto them, What will ye give me? And I will deliver him unto you. And they covenanted with him for 30 pieces of silver. And from that time he sought opportunity to betray him." This morning we're going to talk about Judas Iscariot in our People of the Cross series. Betrayal and the cross, and we're going to talk about Judas this morning. So thank you for being here this morning, and let's go to the Lord in prayer as we look at this man, Judas Iscariot. Father, thank you for all that you do. God, thank you for the opportunity that you give us to be at your house. Lord, thank you for this lesson, Lord, and help us to be a challenge to us this morning, and to not betray you, Lord. And thank you just for this, Lord. It's the name Judas Iscariot just lives on, synonymous with the word traitor. And Lord, I pray that we would live our lives faithful, we would live our lives loyal to you. And Lord, guide my words this morning, guide my thoughts, and help me to only say what you'd have me to. Help me to be encouragement to your folks today. And help our preacher later as he preaches. Pray that you fill him with your power and just be with him. Thank you for him. And bless the Sunday school classes that are going on this morning. In Jesus' name, amen. And a general in the Continental Army, he served with distinction in several battles, was passed over promotion several times. He was born in 1741 to a prominent Connecticut family. He lost most of his siblings to yellow fever, and his father became an alcoholic. As a teenager, Arnold's family faced financial hardship. At the age of 16, Arnold enlisted in a militia and served in the French and Indian War in upstate New York. During the 1760s, Arnold started a successful apothecary business. His role as a prominent businessman brought him into direct conflict with both the Stamp Act and the Sugar Act, where the British government sought to regulate and tax colonial business transactions. Arnold joined the Sons of Liberty and continued his business in defiance of the British Acts, effectively becoming a smuggler. He was elected to the position of captain in the Connecticut militia in 1775 and participated in the Siege of Boston, the capture of Fort Ticonderoga, and the Battle of Saratoga, where he received a leg wound. Despite this service, he was the focus of hostility from multiple officers in the Continental Army. He brought complaints against Moses Hazen, which led to his court-martial. Afterwards, Hazen leveled countercharges, and he became involved in conflicts with both John Brown and James Easton. After being passed over for promotion to the post of Major General, he tendered his resignation, but George Washington refused to accept the withdrawal. Soon after, he participated in the Battle of Saratoga, where he was again wounded in his left leg, the same leg that had been injured previously. Soon after, Washington appointed him to military commander of Philadelphia, where his attempts to profit from his position ran afoul of local officials. In 1778 and 1779, he expressed disappointment and pessimism about the prospects of the United States, and evidence mounted that he was conspiring with the British by exchanging sensitive military information for money. And we all know the name Benedict Arnold, synonymous once again with being a traitor. But if you honestly look at Benedict Arnold's, most of his legacy, all right, most of Benedict Arnold, for the majority of Benedict Arnold's life, he was a stalwart patriot. He was. I mean, he fought for his country in many different engagements, and I don't have time to read all through these. But time after time after time, he fought for his country, okay? He fought because he believed in something. You know, he was a businessman. So when they started enforcing all these taxes on businessmen and stuff, he was against that. Like, he was against the British, okay? But there was something inside Benedict Arnold that just kept festering. It kept festering, it kept growing. And I believe that in Judas Iscariot, there is no two other names as American people. I mean, I don't know about other countries, but in the American culture, you say the name Benedict Arnold and you think of traitor. You say the name Judas Iscariot and you think of traitor. There is no two other names. And when it really comes down to it, the truth of the matter is both of these men served. You know, Judas served with Jesus for, you know, approximately 3 years, okay? But there was one moment, and we read about it here in Matthew chapter 26. Then one of the 12, called Judas Iscariot, went unto the chief priest. Benedict Arnold met with a man, his name was Andre, and they conspired. So after Benedict Arnold was stationed in Philadelphia, Benedict Arnold developed a large amount of debt. He was living very lavishly in Philadelphia, and some of that was being pulled from his position. He was basically taking from the things that were supposed to be for the Continental Army, and he was living lavishly, and he was accumulating a large amount of debt. They say that when he originally conspired with the British to be a traitor, one number I read was 20,000 pounds was the number that the British offered him. And so after he resigned from Philadelphia, he wanted a position in West Point. And his purpose in going to West Point was to be able to, he was sending money out, he was thinning down the supplies of West Point, and with the hope of at one point turning West Point over to the British. And God worked it all out, but the ship that was supposed to take Andre back was forced out by the American gunfire, and so Andre had to walk back to British lines. He was captured by militiamen, and in his possession was found documents that pointed to Benedict Arnold as being the traitor that he was. What caused all this? What caused all of it? A lot of it, honestly, and I think if you look at Judas Iscariot, and we're going to look at that this morning, there is greed involved in betrayal. Okay, there is usually a monetary gain involved in betrayal. And, you know, to turn over someone, many of the people you think about and their stories when the Jews were being hidden by sympathizers from the Nazis. And what would they do? There were some that was very much with the Nazis, but most people wouldn't just turn them over. But you give them the right amount of money, and they would betray. I've thought about the Bible talks about a man in the last times, in the tribulation period, men will turn over the children will turn in their parents. The neighbors will turn in the, and you think, well, that would never happen. How much money would it take? Right. How much money would it take for you to change your mind on that? And you offer somebody, and from what I've read about Benedict Arnold was in a position that he didn't have, he was in debt for one thing, okay? And he needed this money. And he had a lifestyle, he had something. But it was more than that for him. He was passed over several times for promotion, okay? And I don't know the rights, and I don't know all the backgrounds behind that. But when he thought, I've served my... And you look at it. Look at what he has done for the American cause. You know, he helped Ethan Allen and the Green Mountain. But there was time after time, wounded multiple times in his leg. And in his mind, I've given all this, and what did the American people give back to me? I've given this, and what have I gotten in return? I've been wounded. I'm in debt. What have I got? And if you're not careful as a Christian, that starts working in our hearts also. Well, I've served God, and I've gone to church, and I've given, and I've given, and I've given, and I've given. What have I got in return? Nobody's ever given me anything. Nobody gave me any recognition. You know, we talked the last time about envy, about the Pharisees being moved with envy. Well, what about them? I never got recognized. And if we're not careful, that just starts turning inside of us. And that greed becomes. Benjamin Franklin wrote to a gentleman who's written in a letter. He said, and I've got a place I'm going with this. He said that Judas Iscariot betrayed one man. And obviously, I know it wasn't just a man. All right, it was Jesus Christ. He said Judas Iscariot betrayed one man. Benedict Arnold betrayed 3 million, is what he said. And obviously, Jesus is way more important than the 3 million. But Judas was a betrayer. He did not just betray anyone. He betrayed Jesus, all right? He betrayed Jesus. 8 different times, the Bible condemns Judas as a betrayer. There's 2 Judases in the disciples. Every time they are identified, Judas is identified by being a traitor. I don't know anything else, honestly. We know that Judas kept the bag. The Bible also calls him a thief. So he was doing the same thing that Benedict Arnold would. He was drawing whatever, I don't know, he was the treasurer, if you would. It was whatever he was drawing from what people were giving. He was pulling a little extra out for himself. Okay? But Judas betrayed Jesus Christ. The Bible condemns Judas as being a betrayer, Matthew 10:4, and Judas Iscariot, who also betrayed him, Matthew 26:25. Then Judas, which betrayed him, Mark 3:19, and Judas Iscariot, which also betrayed him, Mark 14:10, and Judas Iscariot, one of the 12, went unto the chief priest to betray him, and Judas, the brother of James, and Judas Iscariot, which was also the traitor, Luke 22:48, but Jesus said unto him, Judas, betrayest thou the Son of Man with a kiss? John 6:71, he spake of Judas Iscariot, the son of Simon, for he it was that should betray him. Then saith one of his disciples, Judas Iscariot, Simon's son, which should betray him. You know, I don't know everything, you know, and Benedict Arnold, he managed to flee before he found out that he was discovered. He managed to flee back to Britain. But you know what? Here's the thing. Traitors are never viewed well from either side. He didn't go back to Britain and become a prominent businessman. He had several failed business ventures in Great Britain. And you know, here's the thing. Once you're a traitor, nobody wants you.
That's right.
Nobody wants you. I think one of the things, you know, you go into these big, what I would call like crime families or crime cartels, and you know, you become a traitor and you turn on them, there's not much recourse for you. They will find you and they will kill you. Why? Nobody, you know, okay, and let's say, well, they defected to the American side. Tell me of a traitor that you know of that sold out his country that has ever become to a place of prominence. All right? What did Judas end up doing with his life? He went and hung himself. He went and hung himself. It is written that Benedict Arnold got, of the $20,000, he got about 5,000 of it. And he sold out for that. Judas, you think about 30 pieces of silver. And I should have looked it up and I apologize, but I don't know what the actual cash value, but it really wasn't that much, 30 pieces of silver. And he sold them out. He sold them out. After all Jesus had done for us, the last any of us ought to do is to betray him. Let's learn some lessons from the life of Judas Iscariot. He was a disciple of Jesus Christ. Go back to Matthew chapter number 10, if you would. Matthew chapter number 10. Matthew chapter 10, verse number 1. Bible says, and when he had called unto him his 12 disciples, he gave them power against unclean spirits to cast them out and to heal all manner of sickness and all manner of disease. Now the names of the 12 apostles are these: the first, Simon, who is called Peter, and Andrew his brother, James the son of Zebedee, and John his brother, Philip and Bartholomew, Thomas and Matthew the publican, James the son of Alphaeus and Lebaeus, whose surname was Thaddeus, Simon the Canaanite, and Judas Iscariot, who also betrayed him. Once again, listed. What is his defining thing? he betrayed Jesus Christ. Judas was one of Christ's 12 disciples. Every event that took place in the Gospels where the disciples are mentioned, Judas was present. Judas saw everything that Jesus did. Judas participated. When the disciples gave out the bread and the fishes, Judas handled that. He was involved. He was part. He was serving. But at some point in his heart, he didn't feel like he was being compensated the way that he ought to have been compensated. He was sent out with another disciple to preach. Yet Judas never became a true-hearted believer. There was a secret motive for accepting Jesus Christ's invitation to be a disciple. Judas was not into this to serve Christ or others. He became a disciple for what he could get out of it. You know, I think of the, you know, everything I think Judas was critical of. I think everything Judas was critical of. Well, why are we, you know, I think in Judas's mind when he starts passing out fish and bread to all the people, I think in Judas's mind, he's thinking, wow, think how much money we could make with this. Think about it. I mean, honestly, you've got hungry people, you know, you got hungry people there. It's like going to a ball game, right? If people are hungry and it's convenient, you can overprice things like crazy and make a ton of money on it. You know, a bottle of water is $3 or whatever. Okay? I believe the whole time Judas is, you know, every time he reaches into his bag, he's like, I know I'm just supposed to give this to him, but I could charge him for this. Maybe he did. I don't know. Hey, you know, I'll do this for you, but you have to pay me something for that. And I don't know. It's not written there, but that is his heart. Okay? That is his heart. You know, when a lady comes and she gives what she has to Jesus, and she breaks a box of ointment, and she wipes Jesus' feet with her hair, and well, couldn't that have been sold for? What was he thinking? Money, 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 money. How can I make a little bit of money off of this venture? You know, I'm sure he thought he was a good business. Well, this could be a very prop. Why did Judas join Jesus? I don't know. I think he saw in it a very profitable venture. If people would give, if a lady gave all of her wealth to doctors to get healed and nobody could heal her, and then she goes to Jesus and Jesus heals her, that shows that people would give all of their living in order to be healed. Right. And Judas is like, all right, here, Jesus, you stand over here. And all right, next, you know, how much, you know, at that point, name your price. What was he in it for? I don't think it was in it to serve others. I think he was in it for the money. He was a thief, Judas the thief. John chapter 12, verse 4 through 6. Then saith one of his disciples, Judas Iscariot, Simon's son, which should betray him. Why was not this ointment sold for 300 pence and given to the poor? This he said, not that he cared for the poor, but because he was a thief and had the bag and bare what was put therein. He was a thief. He was just trying to extort money out of people. Okay? John chapter 13, verse 29. For some of them thought because Judas had the bag that Jesus had said unto him, buy those things that we have need of against the feast, or that he should give something to the poor. Judas became the treasurer of Christ and his group of disciples. He sought this position of trust. Judas wanted this position of trust so that he could embezzle funds for himself. He coveted that which did not belong to him. Personal possessions were more important than personal honor. Because of this, listen, he became an easy target for Satan. Anytime my heart starts looking for personal gain, they owe me. The church owes me. The community owes me. My family owes me. Well, because of that, and they're not giving me anything, I'm going to start. Listen, that's what happens in any. You know what embezzlement basically is? Basically taking money from something. Okay? Why? Typically the cause is, well, I'm working more than what they're paying me. So I'm just going to start taking a little extra here, a little extra there. I mean, how many times do you see it? You know, a director of something comes out with, they find out that he's got a couple $100,000 that he has slowly drawn from whatever. Okay? That's where Judas was. However, that can be in our heart too as a Christian. Because if we're not careful, we start thinking, well, I'm serving God, I'm doing this, and I'm not getting anything out of it. Well, what can I start getting? And if we're not careful, you come in, well, Brother Chad, I'm not in any position to even get anything. Okay? Well, are you stealing other things from God, though? It's not just about money, folks. There's a lot of other things involved. In fact, money is probably, money is the prominent thing because people pay attention to money things. But money is not probably the most important thing. Are you stealing from God? Christians can steal money from God. Malachi 3:8. Will a man rob God? Well, I didn't rob God. I didn't take yet. Ye have robbed me. But you say, wherein have we robbed thee? In tithes and offerings. The first way a Christian can steal from God is by not giving him tithes and offerings. If we're going to give God the tithe, we have to know what it is. It's 10% of all the increase that we have been blessed within a week's time. When God gives us a dollar, a dime belongs to God. If God gives us $10, a dollar belongs to God. When we do not give the tithe, we steal from God. And I think sometimes, listen, folks, and I don't know. I don't know where the lines are here, okay? Obviously, if you get a paycheck, you give a certain, you give 10%, that belongs to God. That's not your offering, that's tithe. 10% is tithe. That belongs to God. When you take that from Him, all right, you're stealing from God. Offering is above 10%, okay? But how else did God bless you this week? Because not all blessings are just paychecks, all right? How else has God blessed you this week? How else has God blessed me this week? Well, I got this, or this was a big blessing. Okay, I don't know. Like I said, I don't know where the... But what would it hurt? Listen, folks, I know. I can speak from experience. I have never given something to God that God hasn't always given back to me. Amen. All right? Pastor Robert Ross always, and Pastor Jerry has too, has also, you know, he said, don't be a reservoir. Be a channel. You know, God gives you something and you give it to somebody else. And God gives you something and you give it to somebody else. And as long as you are a conduit that God says, here, I can use you. You know, if Judas would have been a conduit, that's the difference between Judas was like, what can I get out of this? Instead of, how can I get this from Jesus and then be able to pass it on to somebody else? How can I get this and give it here and help over here and help over there? Because Jesus, listen, think about this. Jesus couldn't touch everyone. That's why he sent out the 70. That's why he sent out the 12. Because Jesus couldn't touch everyone that way. But if Judas would have been a conduit, he could have been like, all right, here. Jesus, I need your help to be a help to this person. Okay? What did Judas do? He just wanted to keep it all there to himself. What are we stealing from God? Yeah, we can steal money. Okay, and I don't think money, listen, I don't think money is just a paycheck. I don't think money is just a $100 bill. Okay? We say this, but we don't really believe it. How many has ever heard the saying, time is money? Time is money. And that is a true statement. Time is money. Okay? You want time from a person? Okay? How much are you willing to pay for that time? All right, and honestly, the more skilled or the more specialized it is, the more you're willing to pay for that time. Okay, now some of it's a little ridiculous. You know, the medical industry is. I'm sorry, but when it takes me, you know, 5 weeks of pay to pay a doctor for a 1 hour emergency room visit. That's a little ridiculous, okay? But that's a whole nother thing entirely. don't get off on that one. But listen, time is money. But you know what? Christians can also steal a day from God.
Yes, sir.
All right? Remember, when we steal, we take something that does not belong to us. John wrote by inspiration in Revelation 1:10, I was in the Spirit on the Lord's day. The Apostle John called Sunday the Lord's day. He called it that because that day belongs to God. Many people who claim to be saved steal that day from God. They take it and use it for their own pleasure instead of going to church and worshiping the Lord. Listen, what are you doing with your son? All right, I understand. There's some, our culture has developed a crazy work culture. The shift, it's not good for families. All right, the whole swing shift thing, it's not good for your person. Okay, your body was not designed, I'm sorry, but your body was not designed to work at night. Okay, and we've got guys in here that have to do it. Okay, but they will tell you, I believe you talk to any of them, they will tell you that it changes everything. It changes their family dynamics. Okay, it changes everything. All right, and I understand, but when we just go and we spend, well, it's Sunday, but man, look at, I mean, it is October, 23rd. Look outside. I mean, this would be a great day to go deer hunting. Okay? A little warm maybe, but look at the leaves. Look how beautiful it would be. You get in rural Indiana. I worship God out here. This is my church. Well, that's not what God said. Okay? That's not what God said. And so we have to be careful as Christians because it's very easy to fall into that snare of, well, I've spent all this year doing this. Surely I get one day for myself. God said this is the Lord's day. Possessive, this is the Lord's day. Let's be careful. Be careful about that. So we can steal money from God. We can steal a day from God. Christians can steal their youth from God. Flip over to Ecclesiastes. Ecclesiastes chapter number 12. I just got a book from Bethel. They gave it to me. It was written by Dr. Mike Holloway, and I haven't read it yet. I've read the first two chapters, so maybe I shouldn't say anything about it yet. But I'm sure it's great. But he calls it the, and of course, Dr. Holloway, I enjoy listening to his messages because he uses a lot of military illustrations. And this book, flipping through it, and I've read a couple chapters of it, is very much the same way. There are a lot of military illustrations. And he calls it the fog of war. The fog of war. And what he talks about is as a person goes through all kinds of military training. They're taught the tactics. They're taught what to do. They're taught how to do it. They're taught in a classroom setting everything that they need to be successful on the battlefield. And I've never served, okay, so I can't testify to this. But I just know from other things, okay, I can go to a carpentry class and I can learn all the ins and outs of building something, okay? I could, this past week, it's a long story, but I bought a building down in Kentucky, steel building, and 50 by 150 feet. And so this past week, I went down and dismantled a steel building, and we shipped it back up here. And I've never built a steel building. I've never dismantled a steel building. Okay, I watched one YouTube about it. That was really lame. Okay, it was like some kind of union. I don't know. It was some kind of union, education thing. And I'm like, this is a little far out there. All right. For one, I don't wear safety harnesses or hard hats. And I think if we had to, we would have been there for like 3 weeks. So, but. Sitting down and watching an instructional video and then getting out there and doing it are two completely different things. I don't care what it is. It could be building a building. It could be, whatever. And you've got this, and I'm going somewhere with all this, I promise. But Dr. Holloway was talking about, you got these guys that they know all the rules of engagement. But when you just, okay, so you got a guy coming and he's building IDFs, and you just had two of your buddies get blow up with an IDF. The United States of America has rules of engagement. They say this is your blacklist of men that you can shoot on sight. Okay? This bomb maker was, everybody knows he's a bomb maker, but he's not on the list. But you just watched two of your buddies get blown up. All right? I'm sorry, but he's on the list. Right? Okay? But not according to the United States of America. He's not on the list. Just happened. I mean, a guy incriminated himself on Fox TV doing an interview. Green Beret incriminated himself and said, I did this. Some ding-dong went and looked at, hey, wait a second, he wasn't allowed to be killed. So that guy just lost all of his honor. He's probably spending time in jail right now because he killed somebody he wasn't supposed to kill. But you know what the fog of war does? Makes things foggy. Yeah, he learned all of the basics, but he didn't apply them. Proverbs is classroom training. Okay? Listen, Solomon knew all this stuff. Solomon knew about the strange woman. Solomon knew about giving everything to God and living his life for God. But you know what Ecclesiastes is? The fog of war. It's a little bit different when you go from this is what I'm supposed to do to this is what I'm doing. Ecclesiastes chapter 12, verse number 1. I think this is some very, you know, Solomon is called the preacher, okay? Solomon is looking back at life, and I think there in Ecclesiastes there's a lot of life lessons that he regrets that he didn't do, that he was taught to do in the classroom. His dad and all those, his mother sat down and taught him, this is what you're supposed to do. But he didn't do it. He failed miserably in a lot of the areas that he was taught. How many times does it talk about the strange woman? All these different things. Proverbs, I mean, multiple times. Proverbs 5, Proverbs 7 are probably the most recognized ones. Okay? And he failed in that? How did that happen? The fog of war. Okay? But in Ecclesiastes chapter 12, verse number 1, listen to this. Remember now thy Creator in the days of thy youth, while the evil days come not, nor the years draw nigh, when thou shalt say, I have no pleasure in them. And then the rest of this chapter talks about basically getting old. Okay? Most of this chapter does. Verse 13. Let us hear the conclusion of the whole matter. Fear God and keep his commandments, for this is the whole duty of man. For God shall bring every work into judgment with every secret thing, whether it be good or whether it be evil. Listen, we're talking about Judas this morning. Okay? We're talking about betraying Christ. So many people, well, I'll serve God when I get older. I'll serve God when I have time. Listen, you have time for what you make time for. And that's a convicting statement. Not for just everyone. That's a convicting statement for me. You have time for what you want to make time for. Okay? I just don't have time to do what? To serve a church? To help? All right? To be a witness for Christ? Okay? Don't steal from God our youth. I think the older you get, the more you realize that, man, I wish I would have maybe done a little more when I could. Well, I'll do it when I have time. Well, then when you have time, you would just want to take a nap. Okay? Right? Honestly, you just get older and it's like, man, I just can't go like I used to go. Okay? And that's age. That happens to all of us. You know, as a young person, you're like, well, I don't know. It's going to happen. Age comes to everyone. And you just can't, you don't have the ability. So listen, folks, serve God while you have the ability. Serve God in your youth. There's a song written called Give of Your Best to the Master. And I can't sing, so I'm not really going to sing it. But the chorus goes, give of your best to the master, give the strength of your youth. Listen, David did not steal his youth from God. Because of that, he was there to kill Goliath. Joseph did not steal his youth from God. Because of that, he saved the world from starvation. Daniel did not steal his youth from God. Because of that, God delivered him from the hungry lions. Samuel did not steal his youth from God and became the great prophet for Israel. A young lad gave Jesus everything he had, and Jesus turned it into a miracle and fed 5,000 hungry people. Remember, is it your life? Is it your life? Or does it belong to God? Therefore, my beloved, in 1 Corinthians chapter 6, verse 19, what, know ye not that your body is a temple of the Holy Ghost, which is in you, which you have of God, and ye are not your own, for ye are bought with a price. Therefore, glorify God in your body and in your spirit, which are God's. The Bible tells us that if we are saved, we are not our own. Our lives belong to God. He deserves all our life, not just the leftovers. I'll give God a little bit of time. If I have time this Saturday, listen, if you don't schedule it, I'm sorry. I'm terrible about this. If I don't actually have it on the schedule between this time and this time, it's like there is always something, folks. There's always something that comes up. Okay, I can always have something that will take that time slot. You know, if I spend time with my kids, okay, I have to do it on purpose. What, you, because you don't love your kids? No, I love my kids. That's why I schedule it to spend time with my kids. If I don't schedule time with my wife, okay? That sounds like, well, you just got to schedule. No, I do. Because if I don't, things just get busy and things happen and it slips away. And before long, the day's gone and I didn't. Your morning walk with God, you have to schedule that. Pastor's great at teaching the scheduling thing. All right, so we have to schedule that. Listen, you can be taught all this. We teach this to the young people. The kids get this in Bible club. The kids get it in school. They get it. That's Proverbs. You get in the Ecclesiastes part of life, and it's kind of that fog of war time, okay? But Judas didn't. He stole things from Christ. He stole his heart. Judas, a betrayer. He betrayed Christ. Judas' greed drove him to betrayal. He approached a chief priest and offered to betray Christ for 30 pieces of silver. Before we rush to condemnation, let's consider what many Christians are doing the same with today. Money, popularity, sports. What have you been offered that would cause you to stop coming to church? What have you been given, or what would you be offered to make you stop serving God? Consequences of Judas's betrayal, and we'll be finished. Judas saddled himself with unbearable guilt. It might not seem like a big deal to throw away all that Christ has done for you, but you underestimate the guilt that inevitably comes with betrayal. Judas so lamented his betrayal that it drove him to a gruesome end. Remember what he did with the 30 pieces of silver? He didn't keep it. He went out and he threw it at the chief priest's feet. He didn't want it. Why? Because I think anything that he knew that anything he bought with that would be a constant reminder of what he had did. What he had done. Constant reminder. He threw it and then he went and hung himself. Judas suffers the torments of hell. Notice the ominous testimony of Peter spoken under inspiration of God in Acts. They says, and they prayed and said, Thou, Lord, which knowest the hearts of all men, show whether of these two thou hast chosen that he may take part of this ministry and apostleship from which Judas by transgression fell, that he might go to his own place. Wow. You know, I don't know how hell is divided up, but Bible says that there is a place for Judas. I wonder if there is, you know, like I said earlier, nobody likes a traitor. You can be a traitor and you think, well, if I betray, I'll get recognized. You know, that's what Benedict Arnold thought. If I betray the American cause, I will get recognition on the British side. Never happened. Never happened. They didn't even really like him.
That's right.
Okay? They didn't. They just wanted to use him. All right? And you know what, folks? The world does the same thing. You know, you can sell out. I promise you. Listen to me. I want you to think in your head. All right? I would never mention names, and I pray for them on a regular basis. Tell me a young person that has been given all the training from Blessed Hope Baptist Church and literally engaged in it. Okay? Not just yada 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 yada. I mean engaged in it. But at some point in their life, something offered them something to sell out. Show me one that has been a huge, I'm not saying they're not making it. Show me one that's been a great success. Show me one. Okay? That's been like, oh yeah, they just went on to just, okay? All right? Are you thinking about all the heartaches that went along with that? Are you thinking about all the, you know, whatever, that they sold out for something? Man, don't do that. Bible says, he that putteth his hand to the plow and turning back again is not fit for the kingdom of God. You know, I don't know. I pray that in my life that, you know, I've served God so long for this amount of time. It's not really been that long, not compared to a lot of the saints in here. But I don't want to betray Christ. And we're going to talk about Peter here in a few weeks. Betrayal is different than denial. Okay? Betrayal is different than denial. Betrayal is you selling out for something. Okay? And let's, as Christians, listen, let's be a good testimony. As a parent, we got parents in here. As a parent, you sell out in a little thing, your kids will sell out in a bigger thing. They're always watching. They keep that stuff tucked away back here. Okay? And let's take Judas Iscariot. Listen, let's not sell out. Give your youth, our young adult my age, let's give our youth to serving Christ. Okay? Let's get to the senior saints and not have any regrets that I wish I would have given him more. All right? By and by, when I look on his face, I wish I had given him more.